Blog Talk Radio.
If you find yourself in trouble, count on me, my friend. I'll get right up in trouble's face. You won't see him again. I've got the backbone, American. I've got the heart, American. I've got the will, American. Will you stand up, don't sit down? Stand up, don't back down. Stand up, shout it out. Stand up, let's make it loud. American, American.
Welcome to another exciting show with Southern Sense on Blog Talk Radio. So turn up the volume and enter our chat room, or grab your phones, call in, and join the conversation. Help us to restore the republic to this country and inspire the majority to be silent no longer.
Well, look me straight in the eye. Tell me what you see. I'll tell the truth every time. Yes, you can count on me. I've got the backbone, American. I've got the heart, American. I've got the will, American. Will you stand up, don't sit down? Stand up, don't back down. Stand up, shout it out. Stand up, let's make it loud. American, 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 American.
Good afternoon to another Southern Sense here on Blog Talk Radio. I'm your host, Annie, the radio chick. I'm hoping I'll be able to have my co-host with me, but Tuesdays are usually a bad day for Cool Mike. So we'll cross our fingers and hope you'll be able to break away and join us later on. So this is a shout-out to everyone. Our chat room is open. I welcome you to join us there. And the call-in line is also open. You can call in at 917-889-3675, and we do welcome your calls. Today is going to be jam-packed. We have a lot on our schedule. What I want to do is start off with our usual local announcements. And they're not all local. Some of them are things that you may find interesting yourself. We have right now the Republican Lunch Group, the first Monday Republican Lunch Group in Hilton Head, will be meeting this Monday, November 7th, and that will be at Aunt Charlotta's Restaurant in Hilton Head. The guest speaker will be Miss Ashley Landis. She is the president of the South Carolina Policy Council. A luncheon is $10, including beverage, so please, no credit cards. They ask cash only. If you want to be there, please be there by 11:45 a.m. That way they can kick off on time, and they'll only be able to seat 115 people. Anyone who wants more information can email Tommy Hat. That's exactly the way it sounds, Tommy Hat, T-O-M-M-Y-H-A-T, at Juno.com. Tommy Hat at Juno.com. That's for the Republican Lunch Group, the first Monday Republican Lunch Group of Hilton Head, Aunt Charlotta's, November 7th. We have, let's see what else we got here. Oh, here. Now, yesterday when I was doing my notes for the show, I normally pop around to other shows to see what other people are doing, chat, stop in, say hi, see what's going on in the world. And I stopped in one of my favorite shows, and that's the Andrea Shea King Show, Patriot Radio. I was in there, and you know, I know Andrew. We've met. I hosted a Tea Party Express event here in Beaufort, South Carolina, and we had met. And every now and then you will chat. And she had on Debbie Lee. Now, Debbie Lee herself is a great American hero. She serves in the military. She's done tours in Iraq. Her son was the first Navy SEAL killed in Iraq. Her son, Mark Lee. And because of that, she set up this organization, America's Mighty Warriors. And I put up the website for America's Mighty Warriors in the chat room. And it's a fantastic, fantastic organization. And hopefully, I'm crossing my fingers, Debbie said she's going to see if she can do this. She'll be on my show this Friday. The 11th, Veterans Day. Well, inside America's Mighty Warriors, there is a page in there. And it's honeymoon help for a sister of a fallen hero. Now, the story goes that this naval officer, Brandon, was killed in Iraq. And his sister serves in the Navy. And in 2009, she married the love of her life, who also serves the Navy. So now for 2 years, both of them have been serving in the Navy and have not had a honeymoon. So 2 years now, this month, they want to go on their honeymoon. So Debbie set up this webpage that you can go, and to help them defray the cost of the honeymoon, she's got a link on there where you can donate $5, $10. If you get 100 people, give $10. That's $1,000 to go towards their honeymoon. So go on to America's Mighty Warriors, see what you can give. And Debbie Lee should be joining us, hopefully, on Veterans Day. Also Veterans Day, I'm going to have Anthony Tedesco. He's a young, up-and-coming musician, and he also has a military organization fund. He's got Treats for Troops. How to get that right, Treats for Troops. So he'll be on Veterans Day, and we're going to do those on Veterans Day. Want to welcome everyone to the chat room. I see Tesla's in the house. Welcome aboard. Again, our chat room is open, as well as our call-in line, which is 917-89-3675. Now, as I said, we do have a lot on our plate here today, a lot of breaking news, and it's been coming like crazy, fast and furious, we can say. In today's newspaper, Kathleen Parker from the Washington Post has an editorial, and she's talking about the Herman Cain ad. And let me see if I can pull up this Herman Cain ad and see if I can play it for you. And where is it? Just bear with me. And here we go. Let me play this ad for you. Okay.
Mark Block here. Since January, I've had the privilege of being the Chief of Staff to Herman Cain and the Chief Operating Officer of the Friends of Herman Cain. Tomorrow is one day closer to the White House. I really believe that Herman Cain will put United back in the United States of America. And if I didn't believe that, I wouldn't be here. We've run a campaign like nobody's ever seen. But then, America's never seen a candidate like Herman Cain. We need you to get involved, because together, we can do this. We can take this country back.
Okay, now I got to explain this ad. Mark Block is the campaign manager for Herman Cain. And Mark Block's got a bit of a checkered past. He got suspended in Wisconsin for little shenanigans with the campaign funds. He was suspended for 2 years. Now he's back, and he's Herman Cain's campaign manager. And he put together this commercial, and at the end of his little speech, he takes a drag of a cigarette and puffs the smoke up in the air. And then the next frame, you see Herman Cain smiling. Then all of a sudden that smile just broadens out to one of these infectious grins that Herman Cain is really good at. And that's how they ended with the Krista song, I Am America. And it's a fantastic ad. And you know what? It's gotten a lot of buzz. But everyone's complaining about the fact he's puffing a cigarette. But isn't this what conservatives and libertarians are about? freedom of choice. Hello, smoking is legal. So what is wrong? You know, where is American individualism? You used to see movies and TV shows and everything. Every now and then someone would be puffing a cigarette. But, ooh, no, it's no longer politically correct. So by placing it in this ad, Herman Cain and his staff are saying, we don't care about politically correct. We care about American. And this is what it is about, our rights and our liberties. And Kathleen Parker wrote an excellent, excellent editorial. So I suggest anyone go to the Washington Post and pull up Kathleen Parker's editorial. And, you know, James Carville claims that Block was drunk. Well, maybe, maybe not. He didn't appear to be drunk to me. But, hey, it's a choice. And this is another thing that really ticks me off. You know how now you have all these restaurants where they ban smoking? Well, here in Beaufort, South Carolina, we have one town that says we're not going to ban smoking. So if you want to come to one of our restaurants, the owner then has a choice individually to allow smokers or not. So guess what? You've got a lot of restaurants raking in good business because they allow people to go in there and smoke. If you don't want to be in a smoking restaurant, don't go there. If you don't want to work in a smoking restaurant, don't apply there. Nothing says that you have to work there. It's your choice. If the owner says this is a smoking establishment, know that, then you have a choice to say yes or no to the job. If you want to walk in the door and eat a meal there, you have a choice to say yes or no to walking in that establishment. It is called free choice. So it's a fantastic, fantastic editorial. But to try to derail the Herman Cain campaign, they keep on saying, oh, no, smoking's bad for you. Oh, no. But Herman Cain's saying, hey, it's free choice. It's a legal, recreational thing to do, same as drinking alcohol. If you do it in excess, then you know you're going to be paying a penalty. Hey, you take a chance. You take a chance and you walk across the street. But again, it's free choice. So when that didn't work, they came up with this, and I'm going to play this little clip here.
As far as a settlement, I am unaware of any sort of settlement. I hope it wasn't for much, because I didn't do anything. But the fact of the matter is, I'm not aware of a settlement that came out of that accusation. Two anonymous sources claiming sexual harassment. We're not going to chase anonymous sources. And there's no basis for the accusation.
Now, in an attempt to derail Herman Cain, supposedly Politico has come out with this sex scandal. Somewhere back in the mid-90s or somewhere in the 90s, Herman Cain, as president of the National Restaurant Association, had allegations lodged against him that he made suggestive comments to two women. Now, according to the National Restaurant Association, an investigation was done, and he was exonerated. In a separate incident, the Restaurant Association decided, instead of going to court or whatever and pulling this all out, they decided to settle with these two women. And in agreement, the two women signed confidentiality agreements. And they said, all right, fine, the matter's sealed, it's closed, no one can talk about it. We can't, you can't. Well, Politico dug this up. And in Politico's argument, they claim to have identified the two women, although they do not name them. They do not name the women, but they claim they have identified them. And the woman's departure in 1999. She was offered a financial package to leave the association, and she did. What I took offense at was clear that rather than deal with the issue, there was a rush to hush it up. Supposedly, this is from a former board member. A second source with ties close to the Restaurant Association from that period said the woman revealed at the time that she had suffered what the source described as an unwanted sexual advance from Kane at a hotel where an event involved a group was taking place. Supposedly a third woman said, indicated a current employer that she received a compensation package from the association and was warned the employer that she might be subject of an embarrassing story involving a presidential candidate. Supposedly they confirmed a source familiar with a woman's identity, but they don't come forward with it. Now, Politico has been very quiet about this since this broke a few days ago. But Herman Cain went on Greta Van Susteren last night, and on Fox News early in the day, he explained, you know, what was alleged to have been the incident. He said to one woman, "Oh, you're the same height as my wife," raising his hand to his chin and saying, you know, "right here, 5'3". Now, is that a sexual advance? I don't think so. So from what I was listening to on Greta last night, it fell through. Everything Herman Cain said, in my mind, it's done with. They were trying to do a Clarence Thomas, and I think it's backfiring on them. I don't think anything's going to come of it. But, hey, it's in the news. I thought I would bring it up and let you know what's going on. In the interim, it's kind of taken away from his talking about his 999 plan. And I think that was the idea, to try to derail his campaign. But instead, he's still climbing in the polls. It's not working. It's not going to work. So Herman Cain's going to go out there, and he's going to do his Herman Cain thing, and we're going to see one heck of a Republican convention, I think. We've got a debate coming up soon, and I think we're going to have a lot of fun with this. So now, the rumor is, listening to a couple of the pundits on Sunday, one of the rumors, the person behind this is Karl Rove. Now, I'm not so sure. I still think the Obama administration is trying to dig up anything and everything on Herman Cain. And I honestly think that's what it's all about. He's just trying to derail his campaign. So in the interim, we'll just see what happens and go with the flow. You're listening here to Southern Sense on Blog Talk Radio. I am your host, Ann Ubellis. Our chat room is open. And our call-in line is also open, so feel free to call in. It's 917-889-3675. So here, this is going to go out to Obama. And this is Don Fortney. Can you hear us now? I'm going to take a few-minute break and play this piece.
Of Alaska to the hills of Caroline, from New England to the Florida Keys, we woke up just in time. There are folks up here from Texas who have fought hard to be free. Congress, take some of our money, but don't you touch our liberty. Can you hear us now? Us now, sounding the alarm. Can you hear us now? Our heartbeat is our drumming. Can you hear us now? Marching our arm. Now there's something wrong in Washington. Yes, there's evil in the air. Off the halls of Congress, and some folks, they just don't care. Why we need a new beginning with no Republicans or Democrats. Yes, clean out all the vermin and then kick out all the rats. Can you hear us now? Yes, we're coming. Can you hear us now? Our heartbeat is our drumming. restrict our liberties. But know that we will fight you. We will die to be free. Can you hear us now? Yes, we're coming. Can you hear us now? Sounding the alarm. Can you hear us now? Our heartbeat is our drumming. Can you hear us now? Marching arm.
Fortney, can you hear us now? He wrote that song because in 2009, that September 12th march on D.C., he was on it, and he heard everyone saying, can you hear us now? And as he's listening to him, to all these people chanting that, he was writing the song in his head, and as soon as he got back here to South Carolina, he banged that out. So whenever we do a tea party, Don has to be there, and he has to play that song. In fact, when we had Michelle Bachman speak to the tea parties, when she walked in the room, that was the song we played. Now, I'm going to go on to something a little bit different. And this came up in the Blaze. It showed up in my email. And being retired law enforcement, my blood started to really start to boil on this. And no one in the media is talking about this. No one. I haven't seen it on Fox. I haven't seen it on CNN. I have not seen it in MSNBC. I have not seen it in a local paper. I have not seen this anywhere except on the Internet. No one's talking about this. This is another Ramos and Campion incident. Now, this was carried in the Blaze, and there was a drug runner, a suspected teenager, bringing in drugs over the border. He comes in illegally. He and a couple of buddies are toting 150 pounds of marijuana across the border. They get stopped. They get picked up, they get busted. They're lying on the ground, they're handcuffed. Agent Diaz is there with a rookie trainee. He's also there with his partner. It's 2 a.m. in the morning. He goes to pick this kid up off the ground. And, you know, when you pick someone up off the ground, you know, you're going to grab him by the handcuffs, but you're also going to grab him by either shirt, waist, or something to lift him up off the ground. Well, he starts to pick this kid up, and this kid makes as if he's going to run. So instead, he just puts the kid back down on the ground. Now, supposedly, he lifted the kid up by the handcuffs to a 90-degree angle. You know, anyone that watches cops, whatever, you see this all the time. You know, the cop is going to hold you by the handcuffs. That gives you the maximum amount of control. So if you start to try to run, hey, I'm holding on here. Now, there's your shoulders going that way. Your hands are still staying here. You're not going anywhere. They called it rough handcuffing. Allegations were made that he beat the guy up. Never proven. As a matter of fact, the people that turned around and said that this occurred recanted it on the stand. Every last one of them said, I lied. Instead, they still convicted this agent, Agent Jesus Chito Diaz. They convicted him and sent him to prison for 2 years, convicted him for 24 months. He's already done 8 months already. In the interim, his wife, who's also a border agent, and they have six kids, gave birth. He has never held his baby girl. And he's sitting in solitary confinement in a jail in Texas. Tell me where this is right. I put up in the chat room the link to this website. It's freeagentdiaz.com. Please go to it and check it out. There's a petition on the website. Print the petition out, sign it, and pass it around. There's an address on the bottom of the petition where you can mail it to a P.O. Box in Chino, California. And it's petitions at, or you can email it, petitions at freeagentdiaz.com. And the petition is saying that urging President Barack Hussein Obama immediately, in the interest of justice, to grant a full and complete presidential pardon for imprisoned U.S. Border Patrol agent Jesus Enrique Chico Diaz, Jr. Whereas, according to the United States Constitution, Article 2, Section 2, the president shall have power to grant reprieves and pardons for offenses against the United States. Whereas, agent was investigated and cleared by two agencies before being prosecuted by the Department of Justice. Hello, Eric Holder. Which was politically motivated and instigated by official representatives of the government of Mexico. Whereas the U.S. Department of Justice gave the illegal alien drug smuggler full immunity from prosecution for all crimes in return for testifying against Agent Diaz. Now, remember, I told you he recanted that testimony. He perjured himself. Or in point of fact, as the trial transcripts state, the narcotics trafficker would not be delivered to the mouth of the lion for prosecution. That's exactly what the prosecutors said. They would not be bringing him back for prosecution. Whereas the judge and prosecutors ignored admissions of perjury by the government's star witnesses. Whereas Agent Diaz was convicted and has been sentenced to 24 months in federal prison for violating the rights of an illegal alien drug smuggler under the color of the law, i.e., an illegal alien drug smuggler's civil rights. Whereas the judge denied Diaz's request for bond release, instead declaring Diaz to be a danger to society. So while this trial was going on, here's a father of six, a man with a job and family and roots in the neighborhood, and he was denied any bond hearing, so he could not be released to his superiors, who were standing by him, to his family, who was standing by him, to his community that was standing by him. Instead, bond was refused. But the lowest scum on the earth that probably committed 15 different other felonies will get released on bond. And they turned around and said this man was a danger to society. Though he just lifted cuffs, even former patrol agents Ramos and Campion were released by a judge on bond. It further goes on to say, whereas Agent Diaz has served over 6 months in solitary confinement, subjecting his wife, a fellow agent, and children to extreme emotional hardship, as he received 2 20-minute visits per week. Only 2 20-minute visits per week? What regular prisoner has that limited freedom? Unless you're on death row, none. Whereas the conviction of Agent Diaz for lifting handcuffs is now case law, establishing a dangerous precedent which can be used against other law enforcement officers for overzealous prosecutors. Whereas thousands of Americans are outraged at what is perceived as a grave injustice and a pattern of abuse by the government, are championing the cause of Agent Diaz and urging presidential pardon. Please go to the website, download the petition, print it out, hand it out, and send it in. This is another Ramos and Campion. This is Agent Jesus Diaz's wife. She was on Megyn Kelly's on Fox News. Her name is Diana Diaz. Listen to her story, and let me play this for you now from America Live.
2 years in prison for roughing up a suspected drug smuggler in a lawless part of the Southwest. Border Patrol Agent Jesus Chito Diaz has been behind bars for 8 months now, isolated from his family and from the rest of the prison population, for that matter, held in solitary confinement. Diaz has yet to meet his new baby girl, all because he allegedly assaulted a Mexican teenager who was sneaking into the United States with 75 pounds of marijuana on his back. Deanna Diaz is Agent Diaz's wife. She herself is a Border Patrol agent as well. Deanna, thank you so much for being here with us. We appreciate it. This case is now catching national attention because while your husband was convicted of this act, and no one's applauding this act, there is a question about, in fact, whether it occurred and whether the punishment fits the crime, 2 years in prison, for what happened here. Do you believe the conclusion of the court, which was that your husband assaulted this teenager?
No, I don't, Megan. Thank you, first of all, for having me here. And no, I do not agree with the court.
Why not? Because I want to tell our viewers, and this is from the prosecutor's opening statement, which is not evidence. It's just what the prosecutor believes the evidence is going to show. But he claims that your husband swept the feet from the kid after he already had him in custody, brought him face down, chest down, still handcuffed, struck him with his knee and his foot, then ratcheted his handcuffs away from his body to 90 degrees behind his back while still handcuffed, that the suspect was screaming, grimacing, convulsing from the pain, and saying he didn't know where the marijuana was. And that is what the prosecutor says your husband deserves to be in jail for.
Given the individual's testimony, he did not claim any of that. He had the opportunity to tell his story, and when he was asked, he said that nobody kicked him, and the only thing that happened was the lifting of the cuffs.
The victim said that?
Yes.
So how does the court come to a conclusion that your husband's guilty, I guess it was of assault, and deserving of a two-year prison sentence?
I don't know how they came to that conclusion, but given the individual's testimony, he never said that he was kicked. It was just the lifting of the cuffs, and I don't know how they based their decision.
And this has gotten to the point now where Congressman Duncan Hunter has written a letter demanding to know why a two-year prison term is appropriate. This is written to Eric Holder, the Attorney General, and going through the evidence, saying that even the Homeland Security's Office of the Inspector General and ICE cleared Agent Diaz of any wrongdoing, and yet he's sitting in a prison cell in solitary confinement for 2 years. Describe your family's reaction when that guilty verdict came down and the sentence was handed down.
We were very astonished. We actually thought that he was going to get cleared because there was no way they could find him guilty when it's a common procedure to lift handcuffs when somebody is being incooperative. His family was very set back. His kids don't know where he's at. So for them, life is just continued. It's been difficult. It's been very difficult, but it hasn't been impossible. I have great friends, family to keep me going. But for him, it was very, very emotional. He didn't get to say goodbye. They just took him from the courtroom straight to the jail.
I know that Agent Diaz has six other children at home, so it's not just your new baby. He's never seen her, but you have other children from whom he's been separated. And, you know, my question to you as a fellow Border Patrol agent is, do you believe this kind of sentence, and I know it could have been harder, could have been harsher, but do you believe this sentence, harsh as it is, has a chilling effect on law enforcement in terms of their legitimate duties?
I believe it does, because every officer uses handcuffs. Every officer is taught the same techniques. So now there's case law where it can be used against them. It can be used against a local officer, even the prison guards.
Describe what it's like. I mean, for most of us who sit, you know, in a studio in my case or in an office in many people's cases, well, describe what it's like when you're actually working the border, making arrests of somebody who is clearly a drug smuggler. You know, what goes through an officer's mind and what kind of emotions you're feeling in those instances?
I think the main thing is your adrenaline. You're driven by adrenaline and training. You always go back to your training. So everything is based on your training. Whatever you're trained to do, that's what you're going to do in the field. Your adrenaline is pumping, and you want to keep yourself safe as well as your fellow officers.
Now, I understand that the agent who was closest to your husband in the course of this arrest that he was making said that he didn't do this and that that these claims were being fabricated.
Yes, there was an agent there that stated that he didn't see anything wrong with what my husband had done.
But apparently there was a training agent, a trainee, who gave testimony that was damaging to your husband. Did that wind up happening? And do you believe that person was responsible, essentially, for your husband's conviction?
There was an individual, I don't remember if he was a trainee at the time still, but he was fairly new, and he did state that my husband was using extreme force on the individual, and I believe his testimony was damaging for my husband, and then it just resulted that he even testified he lied to the grand jury.
The trainee testified that he lied to the grand jury?
Yes, he stated during the first trial that he lied to the grand jury.
About what?
About what he had seen that night.
Why did he lie to the grand jury, and then why did he reverse himself?
He said he lied because he was nervous.
And did he tell the grand jury something that was incriminating against your husband, only to reverse himself on that later?
We don't know what he told the grand jury that sealed, but whatever it was that he told the grand jury, they used to come back as a true bill. So that was used to indict my husband.
Wow. There are a lot of people involved in this case now wondering whether justice was in fact served. What's the earliest your husband could be released?
He could be released to a halfway house anywhere between 6 to 8 months.
I'm sure it's tough on your family. There are a lot of eyes watching this case now, including, as I point out, members of Congress. We will see how it winds up. Deanna, all the best. Thank you for coming on.
Now, several months ago, Michelle Bachman claimed that she was going to look into this. Whether or not she has or has not, I can't answer. There is Duncan Hunter has sent a letter to Holder's office asking, to explain this, how this miscarriage of justice could occur. Now, this happened October 16th, 2008. It was 2 a.m. in the morning. So now, you think about this, 2 o'clock in the morning, you're out in the desert. How much lighting do you think they have out there where this rookie could claim to have seen what he saw? Meanwhile, a fellow Border Patrol agent, his partner, is standing directly next to the mook. I'm sorry, this guy's a scale. He's a mook. And the guy's on the ground. He didn't see him kick him. He did not see him hit him. He saw him try to pick him up, saw the guy wanted to run, saw him put him back down. I spent 10 years on the street in Brooklyn. I can't tell you how many times I probably, if for something stupid like this, I could have ended up in prison. You're going to have every single law enforcement person across the entire nation questioning, wondering whether or not they're going to be thrown in jail for doing their job. Now, you've got Occupy Wall Street going amok across the nation. How many of these idiots are going to try to turn around and say, well, they put Jose Diaz in jail for lifting his cuffs. Maybe I can provoke the cops, and then I can have a lawsuit, and I can become a millionaire. Good. Go ahead. That way we can tax you now at the 99% level you want to tax the other millionaires. It's absolutely ridiculous. It goes back to the way they treated Ramos and Campion, and it is a witch hunt. The DOJ has a witch hunt against the border. And why? They want open borders. They don't want to secure our borders. So what's the best way to do it? Go after the border agents. Throw the border agents in jail. Not the criminals, not the illegals carrying the drugs across the border. No. Give them immunity. Set them free. Send them home. That way they can come back across the border anytime they want. Now, they claim there were injuries on this guy. The only injuries they photographed on this mook was from the straps of the knapsack that he used to carry the 75 pounds of pot across the border. Those are the only injuries documented on him. And he even told them he wasn't hurt. He even told them he wasn't hit. All he said was, the cop tried to pick me up, and I was going to run, so he put me back down so I wouldn't run. No, instead, for that simple act, he's spending 2 years behind bars. Go to www.freeagentdiaz.com. Take a look at it. They have on there the court transcripts. They have on there Duncan Hunter's letter to DOJ. They also have on there the Law Enforcement Officers Advocates Council, which is a nonprofit law enforcement advocacy corporation supporting officers defending America. They have their news release on there. They have all the documentation on there on www.freeagentdiaz.com. Go in there, download the petition, fill it out, pass it around, and send it in. There is no reason why this agent should be sitting behind bars. There is no reason why he got railroaded through a trial without being given bond to be with his family. How would you feel now? You've got a newborn child, and you haven't been able to hold your baby. Not once. He gets to see his family for 20 minutes twice a week. How many other prisoners have that much of a restriction? This guy's not a mass murderer. He's a border agent doing his job. His wife is a border agent with 15 years on the job. His wife is in training. She's the one that trains the border agents. Do you think this guy would know the proper way in which to handle a prisoner? So please go to www.freeagentdiaz.com. Check it out. I'm telling you, this man does not deserve to be behind bars. You know, they said, all right, 2 years is a light sentence for Agent Diaz. Not if you're sitting in solitary confinement for those 2 years. But Agent Diaz is a hero. And you know what? This case should never have gone past the administrative level. Administratively, he was cleared by two agencies. They said he did no wrong. But the Department of Justice, at the urging of the Mexican consulate, and that letter also from the Mexican consulate is up there on www.freeagentdiaz.com. You can see their letter to the DOJ. So the Mexican government forced this prosecution forward. They did the same thing with Campion and Ramos. So what happens? The Obama administration capitulates to them. Why? Because he wants immigration reform. He wants the open borders. He doesn't want the Border Patrol agents out there doing their job. Agent Diaz did his job. His wife, who is also an agent, is sitting at home with him, waiting for him to come out. Six children this man has, and he's sitting there 2 years in jail for no reason, for simply doing his job. So please, go to www.freeagentdiaz.com. I can't stop telling you how many times I want you to go there. I want you to turn around and fill out the petition and send it in. Since this war on law enforcement started with President Bush, so Bush was just as guilty as Obama is. We have these are the ones that are victims that have been prosecuted. Senior Patrol Agent David Sipe, Senior Patrol Agent Gary Brugman, Senior Patrol Agent Noe Ailman, Senior Patrol Agent Jose Campion, Senior Patrol Agent Ignacio Ramos Jr., Senior Patrol Agent Nicholas Corbett, Custom Officer Robert Rhodes III, and now add to that list Agent Jose Diaz. And while they're going after Jose Diaz, this came across the same day I read about Jose Diaz. This is in Texas also. And the title, the headline on this one, Authorities, DA offered leniency for cash. This is in a town called Center, Texas, and the county is Shelby County. And the DA that's pulling this BS is Lydia K. Russell. The district attorney in Texas, in this Texas county, Shelby, with a well-known drug trafficking route, has repeatedly allowed, not once or twice, repeatedly allowed suspected drug runners and money launderers to receive light sentences or to completely escape criminal charges altogether. And the only thing they have to do is forfeit the cash they're carrying. Now, in all cases right now, so far totaled, as the time of this article being written, they collected $800,000 for looking the other way. Now, this practice has been in for about less than a year. Now, all they have to do is when they catch one of the suspects, and the suspect has a substantial amount of cash on them, they let them buy their way out of the allegations that, if proven, would have provided criminal prison sentences. They're looking out for the treasury of the county, and they're not looking out for the taxpayers of the county. Now, this system was engineered, as I said, by Shelby County District Attorney, and remember this name, Linda K. Russell. And Linda is spelled with a Y, from Shelby County District Attorney's Office in Center, Texas. And what she does, she targets, number one, black motorists, and number two, she targets drug runners and money launderers. Now, there's interviews and court records and documentations that go behind this. So Department of Justice is looking into this. Amazingly, they're looking at this. But what would happen is they would catch one of these runners, and they say, hey, you know, we've got you, say, with the kilo of pot, and you got $80,000 here, so we're just going to take the pot and we're going to destroy that, but you're going to forfeit the cash. You're going to forfeit the cash you're holding. So you got $80,000, kiss that goodbye, and you know what we'll do? We'll give you probation. Or, you know what, instead of probation, why don't we just completely dismiss the charges? Absolutely completely dismiss the charges. So they got from one woman $80,000, and for that $80,000, she got probation. And then from another woman, she had more than $620,000 stuffed into Christmas presents, and she walked away after reaching a similar agreement. All right, one man was transporting 15 kilos of cocaine. $80,000 got probation. Now, what did they do with this money? Did they turn around and use it to pay down their debt? No, that's not what they did. The county former auditor has testified that at least a portion of it was spent here on campaign material, parades. Oh, everyone loves a good parade, especially when drug runners pay for it. Let's see, holiday decorations. Oh, but we can't put Christ in Christmas, but they can pay for holiday decorations through the county coffers from money they took from drug runners and money launderers to bribe them to cut down their sentences. And that's what it is. It's a bribe. A bribe is against the law. But you have your DA committing felonies. So what else did they get? Holiday decorations. Oh, here, we bought food. Not food for the homeless, food for themselves. Oh, flowers. Oh, everyone loves flowers. Oh, I love flowers, especially when it comes from money off of drug runners and money launderers. Oh, that's always fun to spend. Oh, and they bought some gifts. Oh, gee. I always wanted that nice pen set for my retirement. And, oh, they use the drug runner money and the money laundering money for charitable contributions. And you know what? They got the charitable contribution from taking a bribe. So this is what's going on. They prosecute Agent Diaz for doing his job. They throw him in jail and convict him for 2 years for doing his job. It took a presidential pardon to free Ramos and Campion for doing their job. But they will not imprison drug runners and money launderers coming across the border illegally, but they will take their money and say, hey, we'll give you probation if you just give us your money. I want to say hi to everyone. We got Jermaine in the chat room and Wing Commander. Hello. And I saw others popping in and out. I want to say hi. Our call-in line is open, and please give a call in. Tesla, Jermaine, Wing Commander, it's 917-889-3675. I am missing my co-host, so I'm assuming the club he's working in today has got him going around and going nuts. So give me your opinion on this with what is going on with the borders. And it's absolutely disgusting. But that's what they're doing to us. They're letting them walk across the borders with their drugs, with their money. And then they say, we're not going to prosecute. We're going to let you walk away. We're just going to give you probation. Just give us the cash. You know, we want to have ourselves a nice luncheon today. We need a couple extra funds. So just, you know, give us the cash and we're going to let you go and walk away. Well, I would say there's trouble in paradise here. And I'm going to play a little Don Fortney, Trouble in Paradise. Here we go.
Well, I come down here about 9 years ago to record the last chapter of my life and find an easy place in the eternal sun and keep the promises to my wife. Well, I promise to go biking and I promise to go hiking and take long walks on the beach and find good things to eat, splash our bodies in the water and enjoy our lives together, avoid the people we hated, locked inside these houses that are gated. We got some trouble here in paradise. Low country whispered, "Don, slow yourself down. Is this what they call Southern lifestyle? Get yourself away from the workaday world and learn to eat grit with a smile. Now there's no snow and ice, and Southern folks are nice. I'll get a little older and I'll drive a little slower. Get the most from every day, but be careful what I say, 'cause I might give myself away, 'cause I question all that's relevant today." Surrounded by green and the colors of the earth, it's a land that's easy on the eye. We need permits and special fees to remove any unwanted trees. Could there be some trouble in paradise? Now stores are hard to find, there's no obnoxious signs. Take what jobs you can, that's not for the Mexicans. The realtor is your friend. Just buy a place on the south end and preserve our environment by putting up a 10,000 square foot big mansion. Oh yeah, do it. Oh yeah. We got some problems down here, but we're living good.
Don Fortney, Trouble in Paradise. Anyone interested can always find Don Fortney's music on teapartymusic.webs.com. And Wing Commander was snowed in. He just got power back last night, so I'm glad you can join us today. Now, talking about, that's why I played Don Fortney, Trouble in Paradise, when he's talking about the south border. You know, nice, easy, slow pace you think you're going to have when you come to south of the, you know, to the south. I'm telling you, what they're doing to these Border Patrol agents out there is absolutely criminal. There's no reason for Agent Diaz to be in jail. So, again, I'm going to tell you, go to freeagentdiaz.com. I put up another website up there. It is to Occupy Truth. It's a new website that just came up, and I'm waiting to see how they develop it. And they have little Twitter and Facebook flashings, things that are going on with the Occupy Truth. And some of the things they put up there are really hilarious. Only 15% of Occupy Wall Streeters say they are unemployed. Mm-hmm. I have to play this audio. Let me pull this up. Just give me a second for it. There is this stupid fool. He goes by the name of Pokesame. Pokesame up on YouTube. And let me see if I can find this one. I mean, just bear with me as I'm looking for this. I have so many Occupy Wall Street up here. Oh, here it is. Now, this clown popped up last week, and his video is going viral. Unfortunately, you can't see this video. He's in his mommy's house. I'm telling you, he is in his mommy's house, and he's got one of these gamer's headset on. And I'm telling you, if you don't pee in your pants, then you have absolutely no sense of humor. And what is really sad about it is this guy is serious. Let me play this for you.
This is a video message to the Oakland Police Department. You have committed violations of state and federal law. If you continue with your activity, I will personally come to Oakland and arrest every single officer involved. You have committed not only civil rights violations, but also criminal acts against the people of the United States. Further continuance of said acts will be a declaration of war. You have 24 hours to respond. Failure to abide by the laws of the United States will result in the arrest of every single officer involved in these arrests because you have committed assault and battery. And I have a pair of handcuffs, and I know how to use them. So you better think twice before you assault another protester. I don't give a damn if you try to find out who I am. I don't give a flying fuck. But if I see another video of you assaulting a single protester, you will suffer a wrath more hellacious than Satan himself. Do I make myself clear?
I am putting up the link on YouTube to that video. This guy is sitting in his mommy's house in his bedroom, and he's telling Oakland cops not to do their job. He's going to come after them with their handcuffs. He knows how to use their handcuffs. I'm sorry. I came close to peeing in my pants when I was listening to this, and I had to put it up on my YouTube website. So when you go onto this YouTube website, I have it up on my site, which is under Buford Tea Party. And I swear, my eyes are starting to tear. This guy is just too freaking funny. I put a disclaimer on the video. So honestly, I did put this disclaimer up. And I said, we are not responsible for any injury suffered by the viewer when falling, tripping, side-splitting, or other possible actions when laughing your arse off watching this video. We do not support the actions of Pokesummy, but highly recommend that he, 1, get a life, 2, move out of mommy's house, 3, contemplate a frontal lobotomy, 4, get a real job, 5, wake up to a real cop and repeat his speech, 6, bitch slap himself for his sheer stupidity, 7, lay up the wacky weed, dude. I swear, that is just too frigging funny. I've got to play it a second time. I mean, you need laughs.
This is a video message to the Oakland Police Department. You have committed violations of state and federal law. If you continue with your activity, I will personally come to Oakland and arrest every single officer involved. You have committed not only civil rights violations, but also criminal acts against the people of the United States. Further continuance of said acts will be a declaration of war. You have 24 hours to respond. Failure to abide by the laws of the United States will result in the arrest of every single officer involved in these arrests. Because you have committed assault and battery. And I have a pair of handcuffs, and I know how to use them. So you better think twice. But- before you assault another protester. I don't give a damn if you try to find out who I am. I don't give a flying fuck. But if I see another video of you assaulting a single protester, you will suffer a wrath more hellacious than Satan himself. Do I make myself clear?
I'm sorry, I'm dying. I am dying. I am dying. I swear, if I were in uniform, and I worked in Brooklyn. I worked in the Bushwick-Williamsburg area of Brooklyn. My first foot post, day out of the academy, I was standing in front of the building that Serpico got shot in. That was the precinct I was assigned to, the 9-0. And anyone that knows the movie Serpico knows it was not a cool neighborhood. I mean, the building was still a shooter's gallery. And here's this little white female in uniform, and in uniform I look like, you know, one of the munchkins, like singing "We Are the Lollipop Kids." Anyway, if he had walked up to me and said that, I would have been on the ground laughing and saying, "Dude, whatever you're smoking, just don't try to sell it out here." Because I'd have to not lock up your scrawny little ass, and I don't think you'd like it behind bars. Oh, God. Wing Commander writes, "What do I see Clint Eastwood saying? Go ahead, make my day." No, I think I would see Clint Eastwood. Remember the movie he did with that orangutan, Claude? He'd say, "Right turn, Claude." Just knock the dude out. Put him out of his misery. Oh, God, that video is the gift that just keeps on giving. And, you know, that's the funny thing with this whole, you know, Occupy Wall Street. Can you find anyone that has a cohesive, serious message? Not one of them here has a cohesive, serious message. And not one. You know, you got Acorn that's now back associated with them. Did anyone catch Chris O'Donnell on MSNBC the other day? Not like I really make a habit of watching MSNBC, much less Chris O'Donnell. But this is where they were throwing, the police moved in on Occupy Oakland because of the bottles and other items being thrown at the cop. And this is the incident where that one Marine Iraqi vet had his skull cracked open, probably by one of the protesters throwing those bottles and whatever else they were doing. So Chris O'Donnell's trying to do a serious interview, and this is the space cadet he interviewed. Catch this one.
Quit his job, was giving the orders over, you know, a megaphone, some speaker of some type, that if people did not disperse, they would use chemical weapons because they were in violation of Penal Code 409.
I want you to listen to what the interim police chief said last night after that event.
At that point, we were in a position where we had to deploy gas in order to stop the crowd and people from pelting us with bottles and rocks.
Did you see people throwing bottles and rocks at the police before they used those tactics?
Yes, people were doing that.
And what do you think the police response should have been to that?
I think that the use of tear gas, rubber bullets, and flash grenades are a completely inappropriate response to bottles being thrown at police officers who are in full riot gear. So I think that they should have absolutely not used any chemical weapons.
Tear gas, weapons of mass destruction, tear gas. Oh, God, I'm laughing so hard I'm crying. Yeah, you know, it's perfectly okay to assault a police officer, and it's not okay to go after the person assaulting the police officer. And did anyone see Occupy Dallas? They have a video up there on YouTube, Occupy Dallas. The cops are on the motorcycles trying to go through the crowd to help control the crowd. This one guy comes and knocks this Dallas cop off the motorcycle. What do you think the Dallas cop's going to do? He gets up and goes, chases the guy down. They don't beat the crap out of him, which I probably would have done. I probably would be in jail next to Border Patrol agent Jesus Diaz right now. Oh, God. The girl is, wing commander says the girl is right. They should have used real bullets instead of rubber bullets. That'll work real well. That'll work real well. Oh, man. Where the heck do these people come up with half this crap? It's amazing. It's okay. You know, just knock the cop off the motorcycle. But he can't arrest you for assaulting him. Throw bottles and rocks at the cops, but they can't go after you. Oh, let's see. We can have drugs and vandalism, but the cops can't go after them, can they?
And now there are allegations of drug dealing at Occupy Boston. Police are saying that a couple with a six-year-old, they say, was dealing heroin out of their tent. Should officers be doing more to crack down on illegal activity at Tent City? Sharman Sacchetti is live in Boston with reaction. Sharman.
Boy,
I can tell you, Boston police are saying there are no plans right now to be searching these tents. We can tell you there are new reports of vandalism and drug dealing, and those are raising questions.
Pictures sent to us by a Fox 25 viewer, graffiti bearing the hallmark signs of Occupy Boston, sprayed on businesses and banks. Over the weekend alone, police say they got nearly two dozen reports of this vandalism. And just Monday morning, Isaac Bell and Charlene Dumont, both appearing in court in Boston, accused of selling heroin out of their tent at Occupy Boston, right in front of their six-year-old. The report shows the couple had been staying in Tent City for 3 weeks. Until an undercover police officer busted them for dealing the drugs.
In no way, shape, or form does it represent the movement.
Protesters with the leaderless group say they're trying to screen people, but admit nobody's really excluded. Still, they say it's wrong to associate them with any criminal behavior.
We have isolated incidents of people, you know, claiming that they're with Occupy Boston, but they're really not. They're just, you know, anarchists bent on, you know, criminal activity.
Several weeks ago, a member of the Coast Guard complained she was walking to the train near the protesters when somebody spit on her, called her names, then threw a water bottle at her. Taken together, we asked the mayor how these incidents reflect on the city.
Can it wear out the welcome? Yes, it can. I think most of the people down there will not allow that to happen.
Mayor Menino tells us 99% of the people down here don't want to cause trouble.
Is this movement attracting troublemakers?
Well, let me just say that, you know, this movement has a lot of individuals involved in it. And, you know, there's a few people who are committed to creating crime, raising havoc. Those are the ones we're trying to weed out. The police know who they are.
It appears some protesters aren't interested in hearing about the crime happening right under their tent.
But so these
we want jobs in the United States.
But do you think these other incidents are taking away from your message?
Politics. I think you're taking away from the message.
I mean, can these people get any more pathetic? And they try to say they're like the Tea Party. No, the Tea Party's got a focused message. The Tea Party does not go out there and throw bottles and rocks at cops. The Tea Party does not go out there and set up tents where people can be raped or sold drugs in. How? And then you have the whack job saying he's going to go after the Oakland cops and handcuff them and give a wrath worse than Satan in hell. Oh, I think this movement has attracted every single possible kook that ever existed. All we have to do is open up a huge facility, scoop all these people up, throw them in there, give them some Thorazine, send a bunch of psychiatrists, you know, and then maybe just try to shrink wrap them. You have earlier in October, you've got the American Nazi Party that posted a statement in support of Occupy Wall Street. The American Nazi Party? Oh, please. The National Socialism in America has this to say about Occupy, and this was put by their leader, Rocky Suade, I can't pronounce this guy's name, and he says this, quote, "What is really missing is the, quote, movement, unquote, from these popular protests. It's time to pull WN heads out of their collective asses and join in the attack on judo-capitalism. What do you suggest? That WN working-class white people defend the Judeo-capitalists? If the, quote, movement, unquote, wasn't so pathetic, it would be out there leading these protests. The fact that these lefties, as you call them, who are picking up the ball and running with it, only shows how much more in tune they are with the fed-up masses of the white workers than the fossilized reactionary right wing. Who holds up the wealth and power in this country? The Judeo-capitalist, who is therefore the number one enemy who makes all this filth happen." These are the people that are part of Occupy Wall Street. You now have Acorn. Oh, yes, Acorn has reared its ugly head again. And they're out there. Where else? In Brooklyn. Brooklyn, New York, Miles, Brooklyn.
Some new questions today about the Occupy Wall Street demonstrations. It turns out some of this movement may be more organized than many think, with ties to the now defunct community activist group, Acorn. Senior correspondent Eric Shawn has the latest on a FoxNews.com exclusive. Eric?
Hey, Megan. The Occupy Wall Street protesters, well, apparently they have some professional help. Veteran activists who worked for Acorn, the disbanded community group that shut down last year. FoxNews.com reports former Acorn officials are now playing key roles behind the movement, in part planning related demonstrations and strategy. The former Acorn office in Brooklyn, New York, is now the headquarters for a group called New York Communities for Change. Its director, John Kest, is a former Acorn official. He recently wrote on the group's blog, quote, "The levels of inequity in this country and in New York especially are out of hand, and no one knows that more than the working families that make up the members of the New York Communities for Change. That's why I'm excited to announce that New York Communities for Change and many of our allies in community organizing and labor will be showing our support for Occupy Wall Street." The FoxNews.com also reports they helped organize protests, including the October 11th Millionaires March, where protesters went to the homes of the wealthy, and a website they call Occupy the Boardroom. And there are also questions being raised about fundraising. FoxNews.com reports members of New York Communities for Change solicited donations for a teachers union project, but some of that money allegedly went to help the protesters, they say. The union, the United Federation of Teachers, says the group did not raise funds for its project, and our repeated requests for a comment from the New York Communities for Change have so far gone unanswered. Well, an Occupy Wall Street spokesman did tell us that, quote, he has no understanding if former Acorn officials are involved in their movement, and they call such claims, quote, unsubstantiated accusations. Well, for more on this story, you can go to FoxNews.com. It's right there right now on the FoxNews.com front page. Megan?
Eric Shawn, thank you.
So see, Acorn is back in there. The teacher union is back in there. The AFL-CIO is back in there. They're back in, they're all behind it. You've got the American Nazi Party is back in there. Oh, but all throughout all this, anti-Wall Street demonstrators in New York City are trying to trademark the phrase Occupy Wall Street before anyone else does. So the very thing they're protesting, capitalism, they are going to utilize? But will Acorn let them?
FoxNews.com is reporting Occupy Wall Street protesters are getting professional help from veteran activists who work for Acorn, the disbanded community group that shut down last year. Acorn's former Brooklyn office now houses a group called New York Communities for Change, where former Acorn workers are reportedly planning and supporting demonstrations.
Well, shocking new claims that Acorn is secretly funding the Occupy Wall Street crowd, and a report that organizers of Occupy Chicago may even have ties to terror groups. Here to help us follow the money is Matthew Vadim of Capital Research Center and author of Subversion, Inc., The Secret History of Acorn. Go ahead, sir. Acorn, in its latest iteration, New York Communities for Change, How you say they're funding Occupy Wall Street?
Well, that is the report, that they are funding Occupy Wall Street. I reported several weeks ago that New York Communities for Change, which is the new Acorn front group in New York State for Acorn, it operates out of Acorn's old offices in Brooklyn, that they had been deeply involved in the Occupy Wall Street protests. And also, as I said on this show previously, the Acorn front group Working Families Party has been organizing and paying people to protest and occupy Wall Street. So this is exactly what Acorn and its successor groups have done for decades. They do protest for hire. They create rent-a-mobs. So you pay them, they're willing to produce an angry mob for you on demand.
All right. Can we also move on to this Occupy Chicago? There's a story sent to us, and we did some homework on it, trying to tie up the loose ends. Do you have any information on this? The two gentlemen, the one guy from the SEIU and another gentleman, both are under at least FBI investigation for ties to Hamas groups and other terrorist organizations?
Right. This Issa Baker and Mr. Thayer apparently have ties to to Muslim fundamentalist terrorist networks. And it's not surprising because all of these radicals work together. It's not that these far-left people from SEIU have that much in common with Islamic fundamentalists, except basically their hatred of the United States and capitalism and so on. So they have been working together for a long time. It is not the first time that the far left in the United States has linked arms with international terrorist organizations.
So I'm trying. So therein lies the link. I mean, a lot of people are saying, well, "I don't get it. Where is the common thread here?" You see the anti-Semites. You see the Communist Party is locking arms with them, and now these two gentlemen who may or may not have ties to terror groups. So it is just
hatred
of the capitalist system.
Right, and there's another group called National People's Action based out of Chicago. That's a street protest group. They like to get together angry people and bang on doors and cause a lot of noise and go around to corporate executives' homes and try and intimidate them and scream at their families in order to frighten them. This is the kind of thing that these radicals do. Now, I read a report, FoxNews.com has reported, the Acorn front group in New York City has been paying people $10 an hour to protest. And, you know, that sounds like about the going rate, because Acorn has never been known for its generosity. So, you know, if you protest for a whole day, you're going to get this kind of money. And I guess it's a little bit better than welfare.
All right. You know what? You bring the props. We like the props. And Matthew Vann, thank you very much.
See that? Acorn paying them $10 a day to protest? That's your Obama money. Hey, I want some Obama money. I want some of his stash. It's amazing. It's amazing. And you know what? The people that have been supporting him, now look who's coming out of the woodwork. Ties to terrorist organizations, Acorn paying them $10 an hour to protest. The unions are out there now, AFL-CIO, SEIU, the teachers' union, and they want to trademark their name. On October 18th, Robert Maresca of West Islip, New York, filed to trademark the phrase Occupy Wall Street with the word street abbreviated. They want to, quote, make sure the name isn't used for improper purposes, unquote. They also say on the application the group wants to use the phrase in newsletters, periodicals, it wants to use for merchandise and on informational website. Merchandise. Now, they're here protesting against capitalism, but they want to merchandise and market the name. So what makes them that now? Capitalists! Huh? Hello? And if you get merchandise, that means you have employees, because someone's got to pay someone to sell this merchandise for you. You think they're going to work for free? Nah. And you want to create a website now, and you want to run the website. Someone's going to do that for you for free? Nah. So what happens? The very thing you're protesting about is what you are becoming. Ah. but you still have people, the anarchists, the communists out there, the drug dealers, the criminals, that still are going to prey upon you because you don't realize capitalism is a good thing because you're too stupid. Instead, the very people that are there that are protesting with you are now turning against you. And why? Listen to this woman, and she'll explain why.
Harbor's becoming dangerous as the Occupy Baltimore crowd grows restless.
One woman tells Fox 45 News she was raped over the weekend, and no one from the group ever tried to help her.
Our cameras also caught evidence of drug use at their campsite. Melinda Roeder's live with more on the story you're seeing first on Fox and the city's response. Hello, Melinda.
Hello, Karen. Public safety has become a very big concern around here now that we are getting reports that members are becoming so rowdy that they are starting to even assault one another. One woman told me that she was raped while camping here, and now she wants city officials to break up the crowd like they've done in other cities.
I don't know what he gave me.
This woman, who didn't want to be identified, claims she was raped here in one of the tents Friday night.
You can go to Mercy Hospital. They have a full rape kit.
She says she was also robbed and now fears for her life.
He took all of my bills, which has my address, my social, everything, which means I can't go to my house because how am I supposed to be safe in my own house?
Even worse, she says, no one from the Occupy group has been willing to help her identify and catch her attacker.
Nobody knows no one's name. They don't know whose tent whose. They don't know whose stays where. So what really makes me mad is if this is supposed to be a good organization, it isn't. It's a crock.
Some say the crowd is downright dangerous.
Anybody can walk through here at 12, 1 o'clock at night and somebody snatch them up in a tent. Apparently it happened to her and nobody's seen or heard anything. Then you got security over here talking about they don't know who did what. They didn't know nothing was happening. They don't know nothing. So what kind of security is that?
One man directed us to a tent where from the entrance our cameras caught evidence of drug use and paraphernalia.
Nasal, needles, ties to tie off with.
City police occasionally patrol the park but don't go inside the tents. And although organizers say they want their voice to be heard, some choose to conceal their faces.
The government wants us to do drugs. The government wants the drugs to be here so we have an excuse to get arrested so they can build more prisons and tax more people and take more money.
At one point, a crowd gathers around a tent where we're told a dispute has unfolded between a couple living here. But other campers are quick to jump in front of our camera, shoving and threatening. They say they'll handle it themselves and don't need the media or police.
This is a personal dispute, and people actively need to go through mediation.
People are being assaulted. People are being raped.
We understand that, but we have a security team that actively deals with these situations.
Some campers say the group has discouraged victims from calling authorities.
Occupy Baltimore has never published information that actively discourages participants here to report situations to the police.
Others worry the alleged crimes will detract from the message they want to spread, the reason they say they're here.
We have an agenda. We want something done. We want jobs in our neighborhood.
It concerns me when I feel like it might be creating a hostile environment, which is something we always have to address, and we are addressing. When these issues come up, we absolutely work to address them. They're concerns to us as well.
Now, we told two patrol officers about the alleged assaults and the drug evidence that we saw in that tent. Both said that they had been told they can't break up the crowd until they get the go-ahead from their higher-ups. Now, we also called and reported this information to the public, the police public information officer, and no one ever called us back for comment on these crimes. Live from the Inner Harbor, Melinda Roeder, Fox 45, News at 10.
Now, that's very interesting. They're calling the cops to turn around and handle the situation with drugs, but they're not allowed to go in there. Because the second they go in there, then the protesters surround the cops, throw bottles and rocks at them, and chase them out. Oh, yeah, they push them off the motorcycles. They surround them, chanting and preventing them from advancing into the crowd. Ah, but they're supposed to go in there and take out the drug users. I don't think so. You know, cops are not stupid. Maybe this crowd is. And I'm surprised that higher-ups have been holding them back so much. Occupy Oakland finally got pissed off and sent them in to break it up. City by city, you're going to start to see that where they're going to start disbanding these groups. because you're going to find, as we said, rampant drug use, rampant crimes, lack of sanitation. How much longer before the first case of cholera starts to break out or some other contagious disease? Sooner or later, they're going to turn around and say, hey, listen, you're going to have to break it up because people can get sick. And then the very same organizations they are protesting are going to be the ones that are going to go in and clean it up. You know, it's absolutely amazing. I mean, we can laugh at this clown that turns around and threatens, you know, the Oakland Police Department. We can laugh about someone stupid like this, but when you have other individuals going in and committing crimes, rape, robbery, drugs, I mean, 6-year-old in the tent with them while they're selling and using drugs. And you also have a judge, and I'm running out of time here. I also have another one here. There is a judge in Philadelphia that is refusing to jail the Occupy protesters. Cops are bringing them in. Oh, I'm sorry, it's not Philadelphia. It's Nashville, Tennessee. The Nashville, Tennessee magistrate's name is Tom Nelson. The cops bring them in. He refuses to prosecute. He refuses to even fill out a warrant. And his reason being is there's a curfew that Nashville wants to enforce. Up until now, they've been patient and says, go ahead, protest. But now the protests have gotten out of hand, and the cops and the officials have said, listen, it's time to enforce this curfew. They go in there to enforce the curfew, and they arrest the people. And he just opens the door and lets them go right back on out there. So the very next day, the very people that were arrested are back there protesting again. And it's a revolving door. And it's a big game for them. It's a really big game. It's got to stop. The game has got to stop. And sooner or later, something huge is going to break and it's going to blow up in front of everyone's face. And then they're going to say, where were the cops? Where were the county, city officials? Where were the state officials to prevent this from happening? Well, you told us hands off. So we gave you hands off, gave you your First Amendment rights of free speech, and you abused them. You have the right of free speech, but you also have to be responsible for your right. You have the right to protest peacefully. You do not have the right to break the laws in order to protest. Well, you've been listening to Southern Sense here on Blog Talk Radio. Please come back again on Friday, and we're going to have the Tea Party versus the Flea Party. And my special guest is going to be fellow Blog Talk host Andrea Shea King from Patriot Radio. And we're going to have James Tapscott of the Ramona Tea Party. And we'll see whoever else calls in on that. So until Friday, I wish you a good night and a healthy, happy week.
If you find yourself in trouble, count on me, my friend. I'll get right up in trouble.
You've been listening to Southern Sense Blog Talk Radio. Producer and your hostess extraordinaire is Ann Ubelis. The theme music, American Stand Up, is written and performed by Don Fortney. For more from Don, check out his webpage, teapartymusic.web.com. Southern Sense is a proud member of Ghost Fighter Radio and Freedom Media Network. Southern Sense is common sense. Take it out, Don.
American.